With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to look at that extraordinary demographic boom that happened after the Second World War, the baby boom, which saw a huge increase in births in the 1940s and continued as a demographic trend all the way into the 1950s and 60s. Now, in this podcast, I'm going to look primarily at America, mainly because there is a kind of a limited scope in each podcast. We have to remember that this was a phenomenon throughout much of the developed world. It just happens to be, perhaps, it's most pronounced in the USA. What's observable is that by 1940, marriage rates in America were starting to increase. By some considerable margin. They'd been very low throughout the 1930s during the Great Depression. People generally had far more precarious circumstances, unable to plan for the future, which I suppose is what getting married is all about. And there seemed to be little in many people's lives other than the desperation for work. Huge amounts of economic dislocation, people moving to find work, and also a general sense of uncertainty and in many cases, hopelessness. That meant that people were unlikely to consider getting married until economic circumstances improved. And that, in the midst of the Depression, seemed like an almost impossible outcome. So in 1946, 2.2 million couples got married, and that was a record high for that year. And that record stood for 33 years. So the marriage rates after that kind of tail off a bit, but remain high until the early 1950s. There's an explosion of divorces in 1945 to 1946, and that perhaps had something to do with men returning from war, having married before they left, perhaps with people that they hadn't known for very long, or perhaps people that they hadn't been in relationships with for very long, and then returning after 4 years of traumatic experience and realising perhaps they didn't have a great deal in common. So 1945, 1946 seems to be a peak year for divorce, but the divorce rates kind of tailed off thereafter, and only really emerge during the 1960s, during another period of intense social change. And the baby boom is something we can see within this context. The baby boom is such an important social trend for the period we're discussing, because it determines, in terms of politics and economics, everything that happens, or much of what happens, in the following 3 decades. when you have this huge young demographic cohort of people, consumers and voters for the future. It has a massive distorting effect on the kind of the middle years of the 20th century. And as I said, this is, I'm just talking about America here, Great Britain, Canada, much of Western Europe, seems to experience a relatively similar burst in young people of in the 40s, 50s and 60s. Fertility and natalism had been an anxiety to demographers, politicians and academics in America since the 1920s. And in most industrial nations, rising living standards, urbanisation, work, greater levels of technology to liberate women from the bonds of housework, those sorts of things meant that there were lower and lower, smaller and smaller cohorts of babies being born. And the Depression years obviously have an impact here. The desire for parenthood during the Great Depression was generally very low. During the war, the number of births went up as American servicemen returned home, met once again on leave with wives, girlfriends, and pregnancies happened as a result. But the boom happens after 1945. In May 1946, in point of fact, 9 months after VJ Day, the births grew from 206,000 that month to 233,452. The February figure, actually, I beg your pardon, is 206,000. So that gives you a pretty important idea as to what was happening. Generally, it looks as if soldiers coming home came home to certainty. Things like the GI Bill of Rights and a growing economy made soldiers and their wives and girlfriends who had seen them through the war view the future with a sense of certainty that they hadn't had during the previous decades. And this would make sense in that people tend to make life decisions like having children, and of course not all of these children are planned, but go through with pregnancies when other questions of financial security have been answered. Rarely do people choose to have or are more likely to choose to have children during periods of economic crisis. So there's something about the stability of America in 1945-1946 that makes childbirth more of an attractive option, or makes children more of an attractive option. And for returning servicemen, the GI Bill of Rights had created the possibility of social mobility, which had not existed in any meaningful way before the war. So the world of home ownership, perhaps suburban life, of entrepreneurship, access to study and other methods of social advancement were there for returning soldiers. We must stress white returning soldiers. Virtually none of this was available for returning black GIs. By the end of 1946, a record of 3.4 million babies had been born, which was 20% higher than in the previous year. And the figures for 1947 were 3.8 million. These had hit 3.9 million in 1952. And then 4 million children every year from 1954 to 1964, when the boom finally kind of tapers off with the introduction of the contraceptive pill. So the decade between 1954 and 64, when you get 4 million children born a year, it was again one where there were there's the expectancy of rising living standards, because that actually year on year is what happens. There is a belief in an almost endless economic boom, which does end eventually. And so the material conditions for a baby boom existed, and the material conditions created this kind of phenomena in human behaviour and reproduction. Birth rates, which were live births per thousand of the population, had been at 18.4 per year in 1932 and 19.4 per year in 1940, so only a slight increase. Those raised to 26.6 per year in 1947, and stayed at 24 until 1959, and were at 21 in 1964. And it's 1964 that is the year where birth rates dramatically decline. And so between 1946 and 64, there were 76.4 million babies born. And if you imagine that in 1964, the total population of the United States of America was 192 million individuals, by at that point, 76.4 million had been born between 1946 and 64. So that was two-fifths of the entire population. So a massive, massive demographic chunk is incredibly young. Now, there's something to be said for the argument that Americans, after the Second World War, desired a return to the normal world of the family. And by and large, across the Western world, if you look at comparatively at Great Britain and the United States, attitudes in the 40s, 50s and 60s, on everything from marriage, childbirth, parenting, gender roles, sexuality, are, with a small c, conservative. It was an aspiration of a majority of people to grow up, get married, and have children. The Office of War Information during the Second World War advocated childbirth as a way to build up the population. But some of the darker and more pessimistic projections was that the Second World War might last for many, many years, and that it might wind up being a kind of a war of kind of population attrition. The people, the country with more people would win.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And if you imagine, pretty much that's the basis on which Russia won the Second World War. There was some validity to that view. But by and large, people in America in the 1940s were not pre-programmed by propaganda posters and radio broadcasts. It didn't really kind of happen like that. The desire for a kind of a psychological security, a place to feel safe and secure in family, amid the fears not of the Second World War but of the Cold War, of the Atomic Age, was another suggestion that was put forward. However, there's not a great deal of evidence to support that anybody had children because they were anxious about atomic bombs. Marriage and childbirth had been delayed for many people during the Great Depression, and the post-war boom, new employment opportunities and new financial security and stability meant that these people, before infertility came along, would be able to have children. And so you got within this baby boom, a significant number of slightly older parents. They were accompanied by a younger generation of people who were in their late teens, early 20s, in the late 1940s. They were more likely to marry than the people who had been who were 10 years older than them, say, and who, during the 1930s. In 1960, 93% of women over 30 were either married or had been married, so they'd divorced. This was compared to 85% in 1940. So marriage becomes a much more attractive option as you get into the early 1960s. Marriage tended to happen at a younger age because people were more financially secure younger. So they were more able to get jobs, be able to put down a deposit on a home, and so on and so forth. They were in a more of a position to be married than in previous generations. And the 15% of married women that had remained childless in the 30s compares unfavourably to the 8% of married women who remained childless in the 1950s. And if you pare things back down to about 8%, that would probably be all or a significant chunk of the women who biologically would have been unable to have children. So we're almost looking at the women who, nearly all the women who can have children do have children of those who are married. They give birth earlier in their marriages, with the first children in the 1950s being born an average of 13 months earlier following marriage. So people are less inclined to wait to have children. And the boom isn't really about large families. The baby boom generation wasn't comprised of people with sort of half a dozen brothers and sisters, by and large. Those might be statistical outliers. But it's more to do with people deciding to marry younger. So why are people marrying younger? Again, because the opportunity to do so is there. It's a period of unprecedented material wealth. So when you come back to it, it's always about the economics, or generally about the economics. So they started larger families more quickly and then had between 2 and 4 children on average. The idea that improved expectations of the future starts to come unstuck when you consider the increase in births among Black Americans, who had no reason to expect that their lot was about to significantly change. Most of the poor Black women of America, for example, continue to have higher birth rates, not than white Americans, but than they would have had during the Great Depression. So the things getting better thesis doesn't necessarily stand. The post-war consumer boom not only led to an increase in fertility, but the opposite is true. An increase in fertility, an increase in childbirth, actually created much of the consumer boom and the kind of the explosion in popular culture of the 1950s and 1960s. Not only were manufacturers and retailers full to overflowing with new toys, bicycles, comics, sweets, not only did a more youth-oriented TV output create many of the kind of the iconic cartoons and children's entertainment of the 50s, 60s and then 70s, but also markets for labour-saving devices that were necessary in households where there were multiple children, such as washing machines and furniture. The television, of course, had to become a key part of the American home. All this fueled mass consumption on ever greater levels, and of course house building as people's families grew and they wanted to grow to move to larger properties. The need to buy larger cars, for example. If you take just the nappy or diaper market alone, you're looking at a $50 million a year business by 1957. And in 1958, Life magazine ran a headline called "Kids: The Built-in Recession Cure: How 4 million a year make millions in business." And this was fascinating. It's fascinating how reflective at the time, and how prescient at the time journalism could be, to actually look directly at what was happening demographically and see it in its economic context. Normally it takes several generations to reflect on these sorts of things. Each child was seen as an annual market of about $800 a year worth of products. And a baby, while still in the hospital, has cost or generated $450 of medical sales or expenses. A child represented many, many years of business opportunities. And in this light, it's easy to see why it was that youth-oriented culture emerged in the post-war era. Why it was that by the 1960s there is this sort of, in some ways, rather facile attempt by American corporations and TV broadcasters to work out what it is the youth are thinking and what it is that the youth have to say. One of my favourite episodes of Mad Men, in about season 4, is where Donald Draper concludes that the answer to that is basically nothing. What we should remember about the baby boom generation is that it's not a generation. It's several generations from the 40s to the 60s, born from the 40s to the 60s. And also, within this generation are clear delineations of social class, ethnicity, gender, and religion in some parts of America. The baby boom is more pronounced than in others for demographic, sociological and cultural reasons. Earlier baby boomers born in 1946 came of age in the mid-1960s when job opportunities were plentiful, when the Vietnam War hadn't shaken the confidence of America to its core. Those that were born, say, 5 years later in the early 1950s grew up in a much different, or came of age in a much different America, that of the 1970s. And just 5 years separating them, 5 or 6 years, made all the difference. And they grew up in America, or came of age in a job market which was facing profound crisis, and then found that they endured a far different decade than that than their forebears had entered adulthood in the mid-1960s. Imagine those who came of age in the late 1970s or even the early 1980s. These are entirely different baby boomers entirely different and separated by one or two decades from their forebears. So for many baby boomers, the world of post-war domesticity and opportunity which they grew into is something of a pop culture myth. The world of 1950s sitcoms and Lucille Ball and all that sort of thing, probably for a majority of people, didn't exist. And that, as with every generation growing up in the 1940s, 50s, 60s or 70s, the baby boom was a time of, or the baby boom generations experienced social conflict and crisis in all manner of different ways. So this kind of Back to the Future Hill Valley fantasy world that we've created for ourselves, which we'll continue to pick apart in these podcasts, perhaps wasn't the experience of a majority of people growing up in the post-war era in the United States of America. Anyway, I'm going to finish there, and I hope you found this useful. Do remember to check out our Patreon page, and if you can sponsor the Explaining History podcast, that'd be great. And if not, have a great week, and I'll speak to you about this time next week. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.